Hello and welcome back to our spin-off series, Let's Talk About. It's me, Eleana.
And I'm Anastasia.
And today we are touching on a very difficult subject, so ignore my very happy introduction. It's not a secret that academia has a harassment problem, which has been existing for decades and has left victims with impossible wounds. There are so many questions to be answered, from why it is happening to what is being done to prevent it, and so many more. Together with Anastasia, we will share with you the different forms harassment can take, both the obvious and the more devious ones. We will touch upon what is considered as bullying and let the conversation unfold from there.
Yeah, I'll certainly be using my cheats today. Luckily, I personally haven't experienced or haven't faced that many cases of harassment. At the same time, like, one person's experience is not representable of the larger community. And so to help us present a more clear picture on these issues, Eliana and I did a small research beforehand.
Exactly. We did a small research beforehand. We will be presenting you with some numbers. But before we start with definitions and numbers, I would like to share a message from me to you, our audience. If you or someone you know is a victim of harassment or academic bullying, do not stay silent and do not isolate yourselves or let the victim isolate themselves. Community support is vital in supporting and preventing the worst to happen. So please speak up.
Absolutely. Victims of harassment feel very vulnerable, and it is with support of others and common efforts that we can make the change happen.
Right. So what do you think, Anastasia? Should we dive into the numbers first, or should we start with some definitions?
Yeah, I guess despite everybody more or less knowing what harassment is, I think it would be a good way to introduce the issue once again and sort of set the background for today's talk. I would say that while also reading many articles before today, I noticed that very often the terms harassment and bullying are used very much interchangeably. And I think it's very important now to also clarify the difference between the two.
Okay, then let's jump into and do that. There had actually been a convention that was held in June 2019 by the International Labour Organization, also known as ILO. And on that date, they came up on an agreement for the definition of what is violence and harassment in the world of work. And here I quote what they have written. So the term violence and harassment in the world of work refers to a range of unacceptable behaviors and practices or threats thereof, whether a single occurrence or a repeated one that aims at, results in, or are likely to result in physical, psychological, sexual, or economic harm, and includes gender-based violence and harassment as well.
That was quite a mouthful. So can you please give us a breakdown in this case?
Yes, let's start in breaking it down. Before we do that, I want to say I love the term world of work, because it's so important to remind people that you can experience harassment conducted by colleagues, not only at the office, but also when you are having a common activity known as bonding activities. And that's why it's important to say it's not only what happens within the university premises, but once you exit the door, everything is permeasible. Work-related violence and harassment refers to anything conducted by a colleague at any occasion. And maybe for start breaking it down, it says, so it's unacceptable behaviors, and we will discuss a bit more on what these are. And either they happen once or they are repeated if their aim or result or probable result is to cause physical harm, so physical abuse in the work environment, or psychological harm. That means that it leaves mental wounds on the person. And of course, sexual harm or economic harm, then these kind of acts, whatever they are, they are considered harassment. And all countries that or governments that signed this convention called C-190 are required to place necessary laws and policies to prevent and address this kind of issues.
Then bullying is pretty much the same as harassment. So the major difference between the two is that harassment is usually very strictly categorized for the class of victims that it affects. And we will discuss this in a moment. But also one of the major differences between harassment and bullying is that harassment is regulated by law. So it's actually an unlawful act, while bullying is not considered this way.
That's right. So we will touch a little bit who are the common victims of harassment. But essentially, bullying is something that can happen to anyone and under many circumstances. But as Anastasia explained, harassment is more like targeting minorities. And we will address that a bit later. But what does, for example, physical, psychological, sexual, or economic harm means? Because these are like very broad terms and they can encompass a lot of situations. So maybe we can break down a little bit the different forms of harassment. And the first one and very common one is humiliation. So imagine you are having a meeting with your supervisor or your boss and your colleagues, and then suddenly there are words said with the intention to belittle you and your skills. This is a form of humiliation, and it can include verbal abuse, but also it can be a more mild use of words that are not considered as insulting, but the way they are phrased makes you feel humiliated.
I'm sorry, a very evil joke came to my mind just because sometimes you see these memes online. It's like, it's not what you said, it's the way you said it. Actually, it is important, the Absolutely. Way the person says this.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, some words, no matter how you say them, their meaning is bad. And if you're not in a very casual friendship with someone and you feel comfortable talking like that to each other and you have agreed that it's okay to talk like that to each other, some words are not to be used. All jokes aside, in Greece, we use some swearing words in everyday language when we talk with friends, but it's because like there is an agreement among friends that the meaning of the word is not put in the phrase. So yes, there are these cases, but in the workplace,
you just need to remember where you are, with whom you're talking to, yes, and just know the boundaries between.
Absolutely. And we said a little bit about verbal abuse, and that can take many forms.
I would say most cases would be face-to-face because it's very easy to then deny. And of course, yeah, this can happen in the form of emails or messages online on some social media platforms, yet I think in most cases it still would be something that is harder to prove because you don't, like, the person who harasses wouldn't want to be then caught and or reported. So it's actually very easy to then say, well, actually, I never said this, or I was misunderstood, and you can't really recollect this the exact same way anymore. And we don't really walk recording every single conversation we make.
In some places, it is illegal to record, to be honest. But what do you think, like, in the era of COVID, where we didn't have this face-to-face interaction, we were still meeting online and everything, and then people might have assumed that because there was no contact interaction, these harassment cases would have gone down a little bit. But the truth is, like, they didn't go down. They were just moved online. So it's not directly face-to-face, but it is, like, essentially direct, like it can be like you're on a Zoom call and there's no record of it either. So it is essentially, yeah, kind of face to face. That's true. But yeah, and things get even worse, like if we go down on more kinds of harassment, because then there's sexual harassment and that also has variations. And sexual attention is the most common one. And people don't realize that, yes, we live in a free world and you can fall in love with a colleague. But if that colleague doesn't welcome that attention and they verbalize their opinion that they don't, or that they're feeling that they don't like being receiving on the receiving end of that attention, then it should stop. And if it doesn't stop, then it is harassment?
I would say sexual harassment is one of the most reported ones. I don't know if it's because it's the most frequent one indeed, because, you know, statistics may be skewed just by the sheer number of reports being reported on this one case. But as far as I've seen online and from this little background check that we did, like, it definitely was one of the top ones that appears. Maybe not surprisingly so. It's permeated almost all different fields of jobs, and there are multiple reports, not only from academia, but from many different other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been surveys that have done on general harassment on the workplace, and stories of sexual harassment popped up everywhere. Not only, of course, other forms of harassment as well. They have popped up everywhere.
Yeah, but at the Me Too movement?
Yes. Actually, that is a very interesting thing, because the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, they gave a boost on also people in other working environments to start talking more openly about it. And academia did experience that boost. So survey conducted, or like stories collected after these kind of movements, were way more than what they were collecting before.
This also highlights the importance of support from the community and from other people who have experienced the same or have seen the same, and not staying ignorant. And I think we'll be coming back to this point more and more.
Absolutely, yeah. Because it's a very important point to be making, right? And I think the things we discussed a little bit so far were mainly focusing on things that will cause you physical or mental harm. And now we move on to things. Okay, of course, we didn't say, a parenthesis, that with the sexual harassment, it can be also like direct sexual advancement. So it's not just attention. There's also the more like a worse, or like the next level of sexual harassment. But all these, as I was saying, they cause physical or psychological problems or wounds to the victims of harassment. But now we will move to a category that it is quite big from the information we have collected. And this can cause psychological problems, but at the same time, they can cause also economic harm, and that is sabotaging someone's scientific career.
And I would say in many cases, it is the reason for the harassment too. So it's not just the category of the harassment, but like we mentioned, humiliation, verbal abuse. Why would you do that to begin with? It's not just for the entertainment value. They need something from this. So by making somebody ridiculed or seem weak, you sort of establish your own power. And oftentimes it is to show that, yes, I'm more capable and I'm better than someone else, and you should be giving something to me rather than to this other person.
Exactly. And that is an excellent point you're making, because from the studies we looked into so far, the predominant reason for why someone was harassing someone else was because they wanted to advance their own careers. So there are many ways that they can target that, because they can exclude someone from knowledge that is informal. So it's something that has been discussed in face-to-face with someone else. And it's a knowledge that if you keep it secret, you prevent someone else's research to advance. So therefore, you're sabotaging their career and their research by not sharing that knowledge with them.
And actually, I knew a person exactly with this problem, and she shared with me that she was interested in some methods or a database, and she asked to share it, but instead she just received some glare, since like, for you? Like, okay, we'll send it to you. But, you know, it's something that you can't necessarily report, but it clearly is something that makes you feel strange, confused, and it lowers your self-esteem. It's like, well, why not? Why would you look at me this way? Why would you say it with this intonation?
That is a very good point, because when I started the introduction, I did mention that we'll be talking about cases of harassment, and there are the obvious ones, but also there are the ones that they are not that obvious, but they can cause equal harm. And it's the ones, as you mentioned, that are harder to report. Of course, parentheses, many cases of harassment are hard to report because, yeah, as Anastasia said earlier, we don't walk around recording conversations. If I had been doing that throughout my bachelor's, master's and PhD years, well, trust me, there are many misogynists who made very clear statements that I wish I had on record and be able to report them because of that. But in most cases, we don't have the proof. And with these more quiet forms of harassment, although probably quiet is not the best word to use, it makes it even harder. Another thing I had experienced also a lot, and I have seen it happening in my field as well, is like excluding someone from networking cycles, and that you can do directly by keeping them at arm's length, but also you can do indirectly by going around at conferences and fabricating lies about that person. And then what happens is people will not want to collaborate that person because they believe you. And so then you kind of sabotage someone else's career, or you block them from entering a networking circle by spreading lies about them.
It sounds like so much work. You can just put this in your job description. It's like, yeah, I'm very good at sabotaging somebody else's networking circles.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, if you like to fabricate things, maybe you can consider writing a book instead of like saying them out loud to people about other people. Yeah, make like, you know, fictional stories instead of like, you know, shaming or damaging the career of someone.
Continue with exclusion. You can say also you can deny somebody a promotion and opportunities for their professional development. And of course, would say that knowledge and networking also lead to the same outcome, basically.
Absolutely, yeah.
And yeah, also surprisingly increasing somebody else's workload, because you would think, like, oh, but if you're giving them opportunities to show themselves and their skills, that they can do something, well, yes and no, because if they're overwhelmed with some duties that they don't necessarily need in their career, they won't have time for their actual work.
Yeah. And what some senior people who are known to be harassers or have these harassment traits, they do is like they dump all the teaching to one person because they want to prevent that person from advancing their research part. And although teaching is important for your CV and it's very good to do some, it's also important for you to see if you enjoy the professor's career, in the sense that it's a career path where you will be needed to do more teaching. But if you dump all the teaching duties to one person, then they don't have time to write papers or do the research for writing papers. Or if you dump on them all the lab duties that are, you know, more tedious tasks that need to be done, but no research results will come out of it, then you are preventing this person to publish. And how can that harm someone's career? Well, if they can't publish, they are not eligible for funding.
Well, not just publish, I would say, like, even do some other useful things like science communication or self-promotion. They could be doing that over, I don't know, scraping or trying to fix some paperwork, administrative stuff. So.
And here comes in what you were saying before, like people who harass, they do it to advance their own career. Because what will happen in the case we are discussing now is that this person will not have a measurable output that is what funding organizations or for promotions in the work environment look and want to see in someone's CV. So that is number of publications, number of supervision duties and stuff like that. So this means that they are appearing in the paper less qualified than you, because you had all the time in the world while you dump all your, you know, inconvenient duties to someone else you don't like, then you had all the time in the world to publish, then you are eligible for the funding.
So maybe next time you'll tell them to brew their own coffee.
Yeah, that story hit home once it happened to me. But yeah, let's not go down that route. At least I have found myself in either a group where we all share the coffee duties, we just rotated it, and then in another group where there was a coffee machine, so you just poured your own coffee, no one had to do it. But yeah, there has been people who dump this coffee making duty to their PhDs or early postdocs.
I consider myself lucky. I'm not going to complain about my PhD.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, basically with everything that we said, and I think we already mentioned this, that like, why would people even do this? And of course, it's to advance their own careers, which oftentimes ends up at the expense of the people they harass.
Yes, absolutely. And to that, I want to add that there are people who they may not be harassers themselves, but they stay quiet because they can see how their career as well will profit by that situation ongoing. So by someone else being overloaded with tedious tasks, then you are not overloaded with them and you end up having time also to do research, and then they choose to stay quiet. And for me, they are part of the issue as well. And I wanted to put it out there.
And staying quiet is so common, and people do actually use this to their own advancement as well. So many times I also heard that, yes, I know this PI has been known for being a bully or harasser, but you know, he has very good reputation, has good publication track, I will manage to publish in a very good journal, I'll get a good line in my CV, so I'll just brace myself, survive a few years, and then leave, and I don't care. And this problem will keep on going, there'll be more people going through the same thing. So, of course, it's a person's choice. At the same time, I think with the number of people that are going into academia these days, and the number of PhDs is raising every year, there are more people willing to dedicate themselves to science. I don't think that there's a very significant lack of talents. So why should we allow people who are talented but have very bad morals to advance, while we also can be promoting people who are talented but they don't necessarily go down to such pathetic ways of achieving things?
Yes, this is excellent that you mention it right now, because it is part of the problem in the academic environment that people tend to overlook the harassment trait of a person because they are brilliant scientists. They publish a lot, they bring funding in, and of course, universities need this kind of people. But then at the same time, we need to think, how have these people achieved that? By harassing others. And so harassment and inequality, they are two things that keep on feeding each other. So we allow people with that trait in academia because we say, oh, it's a small part of the personality, but look how brilliant scientists they are, like as you said, Anastasia. And at the same time, we let them treat other people wrong, and that leads to inequalities. And then these inequalities just feed back the harasser, and it's like a whole, like, endless circle. So in order to break it, you made a very good point. You should say, they are not the only ones in the world that are brilliant. There are so many excellent people coming into academia. We don't need to depend on this one person. So just plug the weeds. You don't need them. Someone else will bring you that funding because someone else will apply for it and get it.
Easier said than done, but hopefully at least raising awareness is one step forward. So we're very hopeful here.
Yeah. No, you're right. I know. But I'm trying to be very strong in the things I say because I'm really longing to see a change and to see evolution.
So yeah, you mentioned here also, very important point.
Yeah, this episode is all about important points. There's no doubt in that.
Well, anyways, so you mentioned here a very important point again, that the people who tend to do these acts of harassment are the ones that who are in power. And by using this power, of course, they influence the people who are under them. So if it's supervisor, they will probably do this to their students or their postdocs. At the same time, it can go like further in the hierarchy ladder. It can be senior colleagues who would be harassing a student or somebody else below their ranks.
That's a very good point. So it's true. It's typical that a harasser is a supervisor, someone who is a superior PI, for example. But or a senior colleague who think that because they are senior, they know more or better. But also, it's true that harassment can come from your peers as well. And especially in academia nowadays, where there is so much competition going on, it's very common to see peers harassing each other because they try to show off or appear as the more intelligent or the more efficient than their other peers in order to stand out and be more likely to be promoted, etc., etc.
And here again, reporting these kinds of cases, I would already see how people would be thinking. It's like, yeah, but that's my colleague. They also have their own ambitions. I don't really want to sabotage their career. Well, they shouldn't be sabotaging yours.
Yes, they shouldn't be sabotaging yours. And speaking up, you don't sabotage someone's career. You sabotage a career of a harasser who will find themselves in a point of power at some moment in time and will cause mental or physical harm to others. So by staying silent, you just let someone who is a harasser survive in the academia. And that's horrible. Yeah. Speaking of studies, though, in most of the papers I read, and they made surveys or analyzed the data from surveys, it was a very common result that white male supervisors are more commonly being on the harasser side. So in reports that were submitted, people's stories, it was common that the harasser was a white male supervisor in the position of power and abusing it accordingly.
That said, it's not exclusive to white male. So don't think that whoever is white and is a male is automatically a harasser. No, but yeah, I guess the numbers don't lie.
No, the numbers don't lie. They are the ones that more commonly conduct harassment, but it has been known that also women who have been in power have harassed male students or female students or people who belong in a minority. That's something we didn't mention before. Yeah, we will mention who can be the victims later. But the one thing I wanted to point out regarding the white male supervisors abusing their power and being the most common harassers in the data that were collected in different studies. There was a paper by Mansfield et al. Published in 2019. I don't remember the journal, but there they mentioned that in their results, it was shown that some men who are harassers and they are predatory research academic champions, etc., etc., they do select a small number of women, females, like one to whatever, and they support them and promote them very strongly. And they use that as a smokescreen, because when you accuse them of being sexist or misogynists, or however it's called, then they will say, but look, I am promoting and supporting these women. So they do it intentionally. And they very carefully select the women they promote. And some of them might, that was not in the paper, but I think I did read it somewhere, that some of them might share similar traits.
I would say here also, not only are they still being victims of harassment, but also once, for example, it gets known that this happened, people would be thinking, well, yeah, why is she complaining? Because she still got what she wanted. But like, at what cost? So just because somebody achieved something and was harassed doesn't mean that that's the only cost you're supposed to pay to reach this. By no means you're supposed to pay this cost to begin with.
That's an interesting take, because when I was first reading about it, I thought, oh, so they select women who have similar behavior traits like them or who they tend to promote. And you're right, some of them might be victim of like unwanted attention or harassment from these people, but they won't see it necessarily like that, or they will just take it in because they care too much about the promotion of their career, so they will just accept it because they are being promoted or favored. But I also saw it that maybe these harassers will not harass these women they champion, because then they want their everlasting support. You know, like, oh yeah, no, my supervisor is not a harasser. He's not a misogynist. He never did that to me. And I am part of the same minority group. And I'm saying part of the same minority group because in the studies, it was women who are the most common victims of harassment.
Would you say that there can be also the cases when women would use their charms to achieve something?
Oh, yes. There absolutely are. There are women, I've seen it happening, who would know that, you know, that professor or PI, whatever, likes women and he tends to flirt with his student, which is something professors shouldn't do. But then they would say, what if I let him do that? And then he will pass me with a better grade, or he will give me all the interesting research experiments and topics to look into, and then I'll publish papers in prominent journals or very, you know, high impact results, and that will help me promote my career. So yes, there are predatory students as well.
And if they're even smarter, then they can later report this as sexual harassment and say that they were actually victims. I'm like playing 4D chess here.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call that smarter. I would just say they're cunning. Because for me, if you are smart, why would you make yourself a subject?
I didn't mean this literally, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I took it too literally. I'm sorry. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah, some might take it to their advantage and then turn against the harasser. Because that will benefit their career even more. I won't be surprised if that has happened, to be honest.
That's why establishing proper regulations and institutions to tackle these issues is so important, because it's not some kind of issue, you know, you can just go complain and then they'll be like, okay, we're going to deal with him, with this person. No, it needs to be a proper investigation with evidence, with hopefully with witnesses. Yeah. So there needs to be substantial evidence to support your claim as well. So we mentioned that women are the minority that is the usual target of harassment, or one of the more common targets for harassment. So it's important to mention also the other ones, because of course it never is limited to one. So one is LGBTQ+, which has also issues outside and inside academia, I would say. Age, some racial issues, disabilities, and religions.
Yeah, there is a large variety of the different minority groups that are in academia. And you are correct, like LGBTQ+, they do face a lot of difficulties, unfortunately, inside and outside academia. But yeah, it's very interesting to see that people of disability as well, or different race, they experience harassment. In one of the studies into, it was more of like a survey that was conducted by a study led by Darcy Hango. I think it was in 2019. We will share the sources with you, so you can check if I said the wrong year for sure.
In the description.
Yes, we will share everything in the description of the episode, so please read it. But this survey was funded by Women and Gender Equality Canada, and they had 27,000 participants. And what they found there is that 34% of women, but also 22% of men, have experienced some form of harassment in academia. So it's important to highlight that also men can be subject to harassment. I don't remember if they clarified whether within these statistics LGBTQ+ are included. So this is something that you, our audience, can look into when we will share the source in the description of the episode. So if you're interested, you can dive into more details.
Now we've been talking about harassment and bullying for a good many minutes. And I think it's time to actually think about how we can resolve these. And actually, before the episode, we also asked you to submit some of your responses. So we had a couple of questions, and also stay tuned for these things, because every now and then we like to release episodes in this style where we like to hear your own stories and opinions. Well, for this one, we asked for people to tell us if they've ever experienced harassment themselves or they know somebody who did, and if they felt uncomfortable sharing those or wanted to do both, to also give advice for how to deal with harassment and what to do. And, well, we didn't receive that many, and I actually did not expect many anyways, because it's a very difficult topic to be open about. Well, we did have two responses. Thank you very much. Somehow it sounded very sarcastic. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm actually grateful.
No, we are grateful. We are also understanding, as you said, Anastasia, for the people who didn't submit, you are correct. It is a very sensitive matter, and it's not something many people would feel comfortable recording in an audio or even in an anonymous text, because we requested for that too, mainly because people who might hear about it or read about it might recognize the circumstances, and who knows, maybe non-for-disclosure agreements have been signed, and or maybe people are afraid to speak. It can happen, yeah.
So let's hear the first one.
I think it's very, very nice that you will discuss this topic. When I first joined the university, I really thought that harassment would be a thing that I wouldn't see. I had the impression that the university policy and the working culture here would not allow harassment, but it was not really the case. We had a very big problem we've been fighting for 2 or 3 years, because it was before COVID. 12 people ended up quitting from a lab, including technicians, master's students, PhD students, bachelor's students, because the PI was harassing them constantly. And they did written complaints to HR. And we had mediations, and all the laboratories next to this lab were involved, because we saw all the harassment things. And after fighting for many years, nothing happened. We even talked to the dean, to the ethics committee, to the director of our unit, everyone.
And so here is the point that we've already been pointing out, and the one that probably carries the strongest, that has the biggest strength in tackling harassment issues, is the community and support from the people around you. So if you, again, know that somebody is going through some rough stuff, if you know that somebody is being mistreated, please speak up or at least provide some support. It means a lot to them, and only being together as one big unit, we can make these changes.
Indeed, it's very important. Community matters, speaking up matters. And actually, in a survey conducted in 2021 by Nature Journal, with 3,200 plus scientists worldwide filling in that survey, it was concluded that of all the answers, 27% of the people have declared to have been bullied, and 32% have declared that they have observed someone else experiencing bullying. And the same result was, or similar result, from the Wellcome Trust survey conducted in 2020 with the 4,000 academics, mostly from the UK, which concluded that 61% of the people who answered the survey have witnessed harassment and bullying taking place, and 43% have experienced it themselves. So it's important here to highlight how we see things happening, and if we bond as a community, like you said, Anastasia, and we support each other and speak up for people who feel they are not protected, then we are many going against the wave of harassment.
And I would say that it doesn't mean that necessarily you need to now immediately go to HR or to some other authorities or institutions and immediately report what you saw. The best way to start would be to go to the person who is experiencing that and to have a conversation with them first, to ask what they've been going through, what is their experience with this, try to first see what does the situation look like, and then you can help them to seek help in the institution, because of course, to some level, there definitely should be some sort of regulations how to deal with this.
That's a very good point. And there are two things I want to highlight in the Faculty of Science here at the University of Helsinki, because I am part of the well-being group in the faculty and also in the Department of Physics. And so in the faculty, we have what is called low threshold contact people. And these are people who have received some training on how to help victims or witnesses of harassment to address this issue and navigate through the different layers of the faculty and the department. So you can go to them and you can discuss about these kind of things that you witnessed or experienced, and they're there to help and advise and like essentially guide you through. And I hope that in the future more universities will do that. Of course, it's not enough. Universities need to do more, but we can conclude with that later. The next point I wanted to make is that there is an even easier thing you can do if you are at a meeting and you see one of your colleagues being humiliated. Speak up and say, the way you talk to that person is wrong. You are essentially harassing that person. And I would appreciate if you don't repeat it again. Because if you speak up, then you show your support also for the person who is being harassed. And that person who is being harassed will feel, I'm not battling this alone. People see, people know, and people are willing to help me. And that will bring confidence also in them to speak up for themselves. And then, of course, you can have a one-on-one discussion with the person to also express directly your support and say, I saw what was going on. I'm with you. If you need help, I'm your witness.
Yeah, you. I have your back.
I have your back. Yeah, that's important.
And of course, if your university doesn't have regulations put in place to tackle these issues, there are other places you can actually ask for help. For example, there is an organization, which is a nonprofit organization called Academic Parity Movement, that was created exactly for this reason, to help people who are experiencing academic bullying, abusive supervision, harassments, and these types of issues. So if you're feeling lost within your own university, maybe it would be good to give a chance to these kinds of organizations.
It's so important because it's nonprofit. It means that it has more transparency, almost probably is more transparent than someone who gets funds from different places.
I would just say we found this online through other sources, people from Nature Podcasts have been referring to them. So we haven't actually tried them or talked to them. So take this with a grain of salt. We're just saying that there are these sources, but please check in advance how legible they are and what kinds of support they provide and how they're managing these questions.
Do your research. Yes. It's important.
Yes. And now off to the second reply we got.
Yes, let's listen to it.
I was subject of manipulation during my PhD studies. My supervisor forced me to guess what are my goals and aims and what I'm supposed to do. I was doing how I was thinking things should go, but since it was guessing, my supervisor was not happy, satisfied with the results, and always criticized me. It ended up so that I completely lost my self-confidence and stopped understanding what is right, what is not. And at the end, it was a miracle that I defended. So I defended against my supervisor, not because of her, and left. And it took me after that several years to recover and build up my self-confidence again. So what I should or can recommend. So if you feel that you are manipulated, that you are not understanding what is happening, if there is no discussion or open discussion with your supervisor, just leave, because you will not change people, but you will lose your time and your health.
This is a very classical story of someone who is at the early stages of their research career and they need to be trained, they need to be supervised, they need to be guided and taught how to think as a researcher, because it's not something you're born with. It's not a skill you have, but it is an assumption that many seniors make that, oh, you should already have that skill or you should be already able to think like that. So it's a typical case of a person who needed support at the beginning, as all PhD candidates do, and then gradually for the support to be minimized so that they start become more and more independent. But she didn't receive that. And what she received instead was that she was left completely alone and abandoned. Then because she didn't have the experience or the knowledge, because that's also something you learn in time, she would make some choices for the research he was doing that was not probably the best according to the supervisor. These are also opinions. Let's put that out there. The supervisor thought it wasn't the best. That doesn't mean it wasn't the best. But yeah, the supervisor then made that person feel incompetent. And what does that? It scars you for life. It makes you feel like always an imposter, that you are not good enough. You don't deserve this. And then when you finally have enough knowledge and the way of thinking, you know, the scientific way of thinking has developed in you, and then you have ideas that are excellent, you are afraid to act upon them because you will always think of yourself as an incompetent because your supervisor throughout the years conditioned you to think like that. It's a horrible thing, but it's such a classical story, especially with PhD candidates and early career postdocs.
I'm only happy to hear that this person managed to overcome this problem. So eventually, from what I understood from the audio, that she gained that confidence she lacked from the PhD. I guess it was from the PhD. And another thing that I wanted to add was something I already said in the previous episodes we had, is I agree completely with the advice, is that one should not be afraid to leave. And I also like just kept on thinking also after the episode that, you know, there's a lot of stuff you accumulate over the years. There, you've collected so much data, you've put so much effort and work. It would feel devastating to abandon this. But the way you need to think about this is like an investment. What would be the best investment in your own life? Because would you rather invest into a project that you've dedicated already a lot of time to, but you're absolutely miserable at that place? You will leave with scars, you will leave with lots of negative emotions. Or would you rather choose to abandon this, go to a better, hopefully a better place with a better community, with better supervision, with better regulations, and catch up? Because you will eventually catch up with your work, or at least maybe you will be delayed, but by the end of the day, you will come out as a healthier person.
That's true. There's no point in staying in a situation that will cause you mental harm. You shouldn't do that to yourself. And I will say, I see no reason why you won't be shortlisted if you apply for another PhD, despite quitting the position you are in. It's important to find yourself in a healthy environment. And nowadays in academia, there is more liberty in doing that. Of course, there are some people who look down upon, but I don't see a reason why. Yeah, better to protect yourself than stay in a toxic environment.
I also read that if you leave, somebody mentioned like if you had investigations in place, that there was some sort of harassment, and then you leave and you say the reason of you leaving was the harassment. Apparently you can get a letter of proof that there was an investigation and that your accusations were legit, basically.
I don't know if you can, but you should be able to be getting that letter because it's the proof that the reason you leave is not an incompetence, because if you can't present a letter of reference from your supervisor, then you have to explain also why you're leaving the other position, then you need to have this all the support you need. It will guarantee that you will be taken seriously. That's for sure. So
of course, if you can't get it, it doesn't mean you should be staying until you get it. No. But if you get the opportunity, please use it. And if you do end up going to the investigation, just be aware that this is something you can ask for.
Yeah. For me, one thing that is important to say here is that even if you find yourself in a harassing situation, you're the victim of that, and you say, I'm fed up, I had enough, I'm leaving, and you report it and you receive zero support from the university and there's no proper investigation, etc., on the subject, then do not hesitate to tell, if you apply for another position, that the reason you're leaving is because you find yourself in a difficult situation where you felt you were exposed in behaviors that would cause you mental harm. And you don't have to give details. And I want to hope that if the person you apply for in the next job is a nice person, then they will be considerate, and they will, if you have a good CV and you come with good records from before, then they will be willing to talk with you and maybe in face-to-face discuss with you about it so that they understand more. Because it's important, like when you go to an interview for the next job, to be yourself. Because for me, there are so many good candidates that may apply for a position I open. And so another thing that matters is like the atmosphere that will be built during the interview and whether I as a supervisor will feel comfortable.
I would add here also a practical advice, because we mentioned that a lot of stuff happens face-to-face when it's harassment or bullying. So for the most part, try to collect some written evidence as well. If something can be communicated via email, maybe that's better to redirect to an email, and then you'll have more evidence to present by the end of the day. And just a general reminder for people to communicate with their colleagues and everybody, really, with respect, and let's just be more tolerant to each other.
Yeah, and I think it takes one person to make a start. So if you're in a team where people don't tend to talk about this, but the problems you're facing, you suspect might be, you know, problems other members of the same team are facing, but no one is talking about it, don't be afraid to be the first one, because you might start a group of circles where you start exchanging information and then you build this community support. And they can be the ones who can vouch if you decide to leave the position and the university doesn't provide you with a formal letter.
Wow, it's been a very long conversation.
Yes, it has been a very long conversation. There's one thing we didn't touch very much, and it's like what has been done and what can be done. I mean, we did mention a little bit that there are policies in place, but of course, we also mentioned that there are studies that show that policies didn't lead to improving the problem. I can only have opinions about what can be done, and maybe this is not the episode to talk about my personal opinions on what are the best solutions to the matter, but I would like to conclude my big monologues and our dialogue with this, that if you believe you have an idea of a good solution, then go for it and propose it.
Of course, on this we can go like on a whole rant about how voices in academia are being heard, especially when it comes from people who are not in the places of authority or power. If it's not professor or if it's like a technician, they're probably less likely to be heard, even if they have some great ideas. So my wish also would be that we will transcend these boundaries in these terms and be able to be more open in our conversations and finding solutions to these issues.
Well, to battle that, one thing some universities have been doing is that they have committees, there are department committees, and they might have a person who is a bachelor student and they represent the bachelor students, and then someone from master students, PhDs, postdocs, lecturers, technicians, professors. So there's from all the levels of hierarchy someone in that committee, and then all the problems are at least stated, possible solutions are stated. Of course, our possibilities are limited. We can't influence decision making easily, but there's always a good reason to keep on talking and being forward about this matter. So if your university has such a committee and you find yourself in it at some point, just speak up. We said it many times, we're saying it again, speak up.
And they'll be receiving calls like, oh, well, you told me to speak up and now it's like, oh, blah, blah.
Well, the next question is like, how do I find the confidence in me to speak up? That's something you have to work on.
I'm a courage, the cowardice dog myself. So I know what it means to struggle with finding courage.
I won't say I don't struggle, but I am a very, very passionate person. And if I have a strong belief that we need to make a positive change in something, I just say it. Sometimes I speak before I think and too much. But I don't lack maybe the courage. I don't know.
Well, that's why you are in the committee. And maybe we should be more a bit like Eliana sometimes.
Yeah, and actually I
like the modesty, like, yeah, immediately.
No, what did you say about the committee?
That's okay.
Yes, you should join committees, because committees is the perfect ground to you know, voice your opinions. And actually, I was away for a little while because I was at the University of Helsinki. Then I got some funding to go somewhere else as a postdoc. And when I came back, so when I was away, I knew there was a well-being group that was formed in the department. And then when I came back, I was like, how do I join? Like,
sign me up.
Yeah, because I was like, I have experienced discrimination, harassment throughout the years, and we need to change. We need to make our environments more inclusive. We need to work for diversity, equality, and inclusion. There's no question about it. We need to work on these matters. So I was like, sign me up. I have opinions and I have ideas and I'm willing to share them. I won't keep my mouth shut. So you know that, people.
With
now.
The attitude.
Yes, you can say that, yeah.
Well, we definitely scraped just the tip of the iceberg today. There
yes.
are so many things also to be talked about. I hope this was really useful for everybody listening. Please spread the word. Please be courageous. And please help those you need.
Yes. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Yes, that's very, very important.
And with that, I guess we can wrap up for today.
Yes.
Thank you very much for listening.
Yes, thank you very much for tuning in, for staying with us until the end, for those who made it. Hooray!
Yes, you survived.
Yes. If you made it till the end, you can leave us a comment with the word survive. Then we'll see how many of you listen our episodes until the very last second.
Or you can just also comment about the topic. What are your opinions? Did you agree or disagree with us on certain points?
Yes, please.
We would be very interested to hear.
Absolutely, yes. Please send us your opinions, your ideas. We are humans. We might have said something you disagree with, and we are open to hear and change. So my cat agrees.
And maybe we'll update you in some other episode.
Oh, Anastasia, before we say the goodbye for good, we have a small announcement
to
make.
Yeah, we need to break the news to you.
Yes.
And that is that this will be the last episode for us, for Eliana and me, for the spin-off series.
Yes, you might hear our voices also in some of the main series episodes of the Science Basement podcast, but this is the last episode that Anastasia and I will be entertaining you with our voices and thoughts.
Long blabberings,
yes, on all matters affecting academia.
The cat still agrees.
And yeah.
Hopefully somebody will pick up the project after us.
Yes.
We'll see.
We wish the TSB team, the podcast team, and the TSB good luck with their future endeavors. We will stay around and be available.
You'll hear our voices 2024, that's for sure.
Yes.
Although by that time we won't be in the TSB anymore. But we hope you enjoyed all our blabberings. I hope you'll enjoy more of the blabberings on the main podcast episodes or all the future ones that will come ahead. And just wishing you a good day. check us on the social media, Instagram and Twitter. You can just Google us with the same name, The Science Basement Podcast. And yeah, share your comments and feedback. I'd be very happy to hear from you.
And give us a thumbs up and join our community if you haven't joined already, because this is a way for us to grow as a non-profit organization and keep delivering interesting content to you.
And make your voices heard.
Absolutely. So without further ado,
bye-bye.
Bye.